Wormholes, particle physics, extra dimensions. Are the wonders of so-called reality really what they appear to be? Or do we exist in an elaborate hologram? Is our universe the result of random activity or the result of intelligent design? If a creator was involved, can we discover him through our perception of divine order? This is Into the Multiverse with Josh Peck.
Could Christianity actually accommodate a genuine extraterrestrial reality? That's going to be the topic of tonight's show. Very controversial. I'm sure we're going to get some comments about this.
They're
one.
They're going to hate it so much.
Well, I think the trolls will, but I think our audience can handle it.
Nobody cares about the trolls.
I think our audience are going to handle it just fine. I think they're really going to love this. This is something I'm really interested in. With us in studio, our good friend, Dr. Michael Heiser. How you doing?
Good. Very good.
Awesome.
Good to have you back. So today we've done a ton of recording. I mean, all the SkyWatch TV episodes we've done. This is the third Into the Multiverse episode.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of cool because so our audience, they saw you last time, which was to our audience probably a while ago. And we talked about interpreting scripture correctly and how doing it incorrectly could actually have deadly consequences in some scenarios that we could see throughout history.
Yeah.
So, you know, the cat's out of the bag by now. People know me and Derek have written a book called The Day the Earth Stands Still. Mm-hmm. And because Tom Horn is awesome and Defender Publishing is, in my opinion, the best book publisher out there, he put together this amazing package of me and Derek's book, my new book, Unraveling the Multiverse, which we'll do episodes on that if we haven't already. And your two books, The Facade and The Portent, and mm-hmm. you get into this in those books, which are mm-hmm. phenomenal, by the way. They're fiction. But they're based on a lot of fact, phenomenally written. I don't read fiction. I love these books. It's kind of like the podcast thing. I don't listen to podcasts, but I listen to yours. But it kind of, it deals with this question. And for the audience, this isn't going to be the typical Genesis 6 aliens or demons kind of thing. You know, of course there's an element of that in there. Mm-hmm. There has to be, but it's a much deeper question than that. Mm-hmm. You've done presentations on this. You've written about this. I just kind of want to turn it loose. Sure. Where do we begin?
Yeah, I mean, the facade, this question is the centerpiece of the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, the novel, which I wrote in graduate school, you know, what should have been the first year of my dissertation, I was just burnt out. So it's like, I'm just going to skip a year and write a novel because I just wanted to try it.
Yeah.
And the facade was the thing that sort of got me into, you know, the paranormal circuit, if that's the right term. Like it, mm-hmm. I wound up doing the Art Bell Show,
mm-hmm.
because of this novel. I was asked to speak at the Bay Area UFO conference because of this novel. So it has kind of its own strange history, but the centerpiece is this question: could conservative, you know, Bible believing Christianity tolerate, accommodate, survive a genuine extraterrestrial reality? And the main character in the book is faced with this question.
Mm-hmm.
Again, through a variety of circumstances, finds himself in a situation where he's either in the right or the wrong place at the right or wrong time and is confronted with this. And so he has to help the reader, as the storyline proceeds, sort of think through how you would do this as a serious Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And the short version is, we should not fear the idea that there could be extraterrestrials. It's actually a really old question in the context of the church, and even before we had the church, you know, back in the BC era.
Right. And of course, when we talk about this, just for the audience, we're talking about this divorced from all the UFO alien abduction, gray aliens, mantis stuff. We're divorcing it from that. We're not bringing that in. We're just talking about the general idea, the broad question: could there be actual extraterrestrial life? So I just wanted to make sure that the audience knew where we were coming from.
All of those things is one reason why today's audience would resist it, because they've been conditioned to, again, think, well, the answer for this is all demons.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they'll marry it to the alien abduction thing. And even people in ufology, you know, the serious UFO people, a lot of them don't have any time for the abduction stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, they're nuts and bolts people, they're philosophers, they're sociologists, you know, people in the field of religion and theology. And their thing is, if there is life out there elsewhere, mm-hmm. you know, how's that going to impact us?
Yeah.
I went, for instance, in, 3 years ago, every year in November, I go to the annual, you know, the Geek Fest, the academic mm-hmm. meetings. Everybody mm-hmm. who's anybody in the world in biblical studies, you know, goes to this. The American Academy of Religion meets there. Well, the AAR, American Academy of Religion, devoted an entire afternoon one day at the scholarly conference to the question of astrobiology mm-hmm. and its religious implications.
Mm.
So it's just, it's illustrative that there are serious people out there thinking about this topic.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with this other stuff. That's really about contact team messaging, mm-hmm. abduction stuff. But the pure question, if we can put it that way, just mm-hmm. the simple question, you know, what if there was life elsewhere? Mm-hmm. What does that do? So the main character gets confronted with this. And it, like I said, it's an old question.
Mm-hmm.
Early on, you know, Plato and Aristotle discussed this. They had, you know, sort of a negative view for it. You know, they, you know, one, Plato would say, well, you know, you can't have more than one world because then that would diminish from this one and the perfection of the creator. I mean, and you might look at that, well, that's kind of a squirrely philosophical argument. Like, why does this one thing have to necessitate the other?
Right.
But I mean, that's where he was at. And he was followed by a lot of early church thinkers. Again, mm-hmm. those in your audience who've spent any time looking at the church fathers knows that they were very Platonic
yes.
in their approach, Augustine especially. So for the first few centuries, this was mostly a negative question.
Mm-hmm.
You get into the Middle Ages, it starts to shift a little bit, where theologians, and most of them are going to be within the dominant Catholic orientation, they're looking at it and thinking, well, you know, we might not buy it, but it really doesn't harm anything. You know,
right.
It's like kind of an innocuous perspective. Mm-hmm. It's only when you get into the 1400s where theologians are starting to invoke something called the principle of plenitude,
mm-hmm.
that if you don't believe there are other worlds, that's bad theology because it impinges on God's omnipotence.
Mm-hmm.
Why couldn't he have created this? You're telling him he couldn't have done something.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes theologically offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts to shift more positively. And it is positive until you hit, believe it or not, the American Revolution.
Mm.
Thomas Paine, who wasn't a scientist and certainly wasn't a theologian, he's like one of the few church fathers that you could actually call an atheist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He actually used the doctrine that there could be other worlds to ridicule Christianity.
Mm.
He was the guy that sort of popularized in a pejorative way, well, if this is true, then Jesus has to go and die on all these planets, and you mm-hmm. have to have incarnations on all these. He used it to make Christianity look absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was reacted to by some very famous, you know, serious theologians. Timothy Dwight, very famous preacher. He was, at the time, was president of Yale. Thomas Chalmers was a Scottish evangelist. And these were not lightweights intellectually. I mean, mm-hmm. they responded, they debated Paine's views, and in so doing, they actually defended the idea of other worlds.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And that becomes, it's a viable thing to believe in the context of your faith until we sort of hit Darwin.
Mm. Right.
Because then it gets married to evolution.
Yeah.
And that just turns the church sour on the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then mm-hmm. you get, that's the mid-1800s. You get into the early 20th century, the mid-20th century, and now we're marrying the question of other worlds too, things that we've discussed today, comic books,
mm-hmm.
okay, science fiction writing, horror writing.
Mm-hmm.
And that just sort of overturns the bucket. Now it mm-hmm. becomes something deeply sinister.
Yeah.
And so there's a shift in the popular culture, and the church is affected by that shift. So the two things, the sort of occult demonic element
mm-hmm.
that comes out of, you know, this period and we're still dealing with today, and then also the evolutionary perspective. Those are the two sort of poisons
mm-hmm.
that really, you know, outside maybe Catholicism, you know, your major sort of evangelical, the serious Christian people,
mm-hmm.
they don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole because of these two other things. But it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
You know, some of the arguments against, you know, this would, what are the apple carts that would overturn?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's talk about that. Some people would say, well, the Bible doesn't talk about extraterrestrials, so there can't be any, because if there are, then the Bible's wrong.
Well, it's kind of a weak argument, though, isn't
it?
Is.
Yeah. It's a terribly weak argument. You know, the Bible doesn't talk about microwaves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't talk about toilet paper. You know,
right.
People grow up with this sort of view of Scripture that it is the exhaustive pool of knowledge for every subject that can possibly be thought of. again, it just doesn't work.
Right.
Another one is, well, if there's intelligent extraterrestrials, then we can't be created in the image of God because they would be intelligent as well.
Now, that's a big topic, and that's something that we're gonna come back to. So make sure to stay tuned because that is incredibly important right after this.
Three very mysterious shiny lights have police and residents puzzled.
This pilot who flew Barack Obama says UFOs are real, and he's seen one firsthand.
The triangular-shaped flashing object appears to be floating above the capital city.
So this large disc,
oh yeah,
massive, it was following you.
It was pacing us. Here's this giant red ball just above the clouds.
Unbelievable.
Oh, it was.
Four different species, at least, had been visiting this planet for thousands of years.
For the first time in history, the disturbing truth behind the push for official disclosure of extraterrestrial intelligence and UFOs has been uncovered. For years, religious and secular researchers have tried to determine how the world would react to a genuine extraterrestrial reality. But what if their conclusions are wrong? Humankind has defined them as devilish creatures. Yet something even more diabolical is occurring. What if there's a difference between ancient demonic phenomena and the question of extraterrestrial life? It was hinted at in the WikiLeaks.
People really want to know what the government knows.
I have said I want to open the files as much as we can.
A reality that lurks in the shadows that will soon come to light. A truth so shocking, it threatens the destiny of every soul on planet Earth. You must ask yourself, why now suddenly is seeking to answer the question of UFOs life-threatening?
This is another investigator who is getting very close to information on official disclosure that's now been found dead.
I've talked to a lot of pilots here, and they've all admitted that they've seen UFOs, but they kind of keep quiet about it.
The government discounts every single report that ever seems to come out, every UFO report.
I'm about the only person willing to get in front of a camera and talk about the UFOs that were flying overhead.
Promises of earth-shattering news are being quietly whispered by scientists and government insiders. Is something about to happen that was prophesied in the Holy Bible? This November, internationally acclaimed best-selling authors Josh Peck and Derek P. Gilbert peel back the lid on an astonishing cover-up and expose on a most insidious deception. In The Day the Earth Stands Still, unmasking the old gods behind ETs, UFOs, and the official disclosure movement. Coming November 2017.
The holidays are rapidly approaching, and now's your chance to save big on the largest SkyWatch TV giveaway of the year. We're proud to announce the Day the Earth Stands Still Ultimate Collection. When you purchase the Day the Earth Stands Still from SkyWatch TV, you'll also receive Josh Peck's most significant work in the new compilation book, Unraveling the Multiverse. Also back in print through Defender Publishing for the first time ever, Dr. Michael Heiser's breakthrough books, The Facade and The Portent. But we're just getting started. You'll also receive the brand new, top secret 5-volume DVD collection, Project Stargate. This unprecedented series of never-before-released confidential interviews features 12 of the world's leading authorities on UFOs, so-called aliens, gods, and the coming day of contact. You'll be amazed as we go behind the scenes to ask experts what they really believe is coming. Watch as men with security clearances like Dr. Chuck Missler share for the first time what they know. Then take notes as Dr. Michael Heiser, the late Chris Putnam, Russ Dizdar, Joe Jordan, L.A. Marzulli, Daryl Sims, Gary Stearman, and others weigh in on what will soon cause the world to stand still in awe. And yet, we're still not finished. You'll also receive Dr. Thomas Horn's presentation, The Secret Vatican and Alien Antichrist Connection on DVD, the digitally re-released legendary 20-hour audio series, Official Disclosure, the DVD presentation, Quantum Physics in Prophecy, and two free brand new gift books to add to your library or to give away as gifts this holiday season. Sold separately, this colossal special offer holds a retail value of over $300. But it's yours now for a very limited time at only $39.99 plus shipping and handling. So don't delay. This avalanche of holiday gifts is perfect for the serious researcher in your life, but is only available while supplies last. So take advantage of this, the largest Skywatch TV giveaway of 2017, while you can when you purchase the Day the Earth Stands Still Ultimate Collection, now at the Skywatch TV store. Order online or call 1-844-750-4985.
Welcome back to Into the Multiverse. Don't want to waste any time. Let's get right back into it. So the image of God, yeah, how does that play into this conversation?
Yeah, I mean, If you link the image of God with any attribute,
mm-hmm.
and typically it's things like intelligence, mm-hmm. okay, or self-awareness, consciousness,
mm-hmm.
if you're linking it with any attribute, then you have a serious problem theologically,
mm-hmm.
because we want life to be sacred at all stages.
Right, from conception on.
Exactly. Yeah. So I used to teach ethics at a Christian college, and I used to love Abortion Day. Abortion Day. Because I would go in there and I would say, okay, well, how many of you are against abortion? Of course, every hand goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, well, why?
Mm-hmm.
And sooner or later, it takes about 30 seconds, somebody's going to bring up the image of God, you know, mm-hmm. the sanctity of life and all this. And I said, well, that doesn't really answer the question. What's the image of God? Maybe we need to talk about that, and then maybe I'll understand. I mean, I'm playing them here.
Mm-hmm.
And so invariably, you get all these different, you get the grocery list of attributes. And I would say, well, I just don't understand now why we're not pro-choice, at least in the first trimester, because the fetus or the little, you know, two-celled conceptus
mm-hmm.
doesn't have the ability to pray.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have intelligence. It doesn't have a brain. It doesn't mm-hmm. have any of these things. Mm-hmm. So you've just given me a pro-choice argument mm-hmm. from the Bible.
And is that usually where you get
people out?
Is that usually where you get people that say, well, there's the potential.
Right. Well, and that would come up, well, you know, Mike, you know, they're going to have those things. It's wonderful. Now
but
we have potential persons.
Yeah.
So you've just given me the pro-choice argument from the Bible.
And, mm-hmm.
you know, about that time they'd realize that, oh man, we were played.
Yeah.
And you'd always have the person like, I'm going to tell my pastor, my parents. It's like, look, I'm your friend. I'm going to show you why you set your own trap and then you walked into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this image of God thing, you know, to cut to the chase here. I do this in Unseen Realm, mm-hmm. my nonfiction, and in the fiction book, The Facade. The character, again, has to go down all these roads because he's confronted with how do we think about this now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really actually, he doesn't know it, but that's the reason why he's in this mm-hmm. position, because someone is playing him as well. But he takes the reader through what you really need to think about as a believer, because he's a serious, you know, Christian in mm-hmm. the book. So the image of God really refers to a status, okay? It's representing God. And humans are the only ones that get this status.
Mm-hmm.
By definition, to be human is to be the image of God.
So it's something we are, not what we
right.
have.
It's something you are. It's not an attribute given to you.
Mm-hmm.
So that wipes off the ET objection right off the table. Who cares if they're intelligent?
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with the image.
Right. Right.
So, you know, there are a number of things that sort of get pulled out of the hat that really kind of scare Christians
mm-hmm.
that really don't need to.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about, again, how do we frame the discussion mm-hmm. so that we can, you know, look at it intelligently. The redemption, the Thomas Paine objection.
Mm-hmm. Right, okay. Yeah, how would we answer that?
I don't believe, and a lot of Roman Catholic theologians and astronomers, you know, people who are into this ET question, you know, would affirm the idea that, yeah, we're going to have extra incarnations and crucifixions and redemptions, and, you know, C.S. Lewis sort of traverses down this path.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that at all. And I actually think there's scripture to deny it.
Mm-hmm.
And the scripture is Hebrews 2. Let me just quote the part of the passage here. It begins in Hebrews 2:5. For it was not to angels that God subjected the world to come of which we are speaking. Okay, mm-hmm. well, who did he subject the world to come? You know, that's going to be us. Mm-hmm. We are going to dominate the earth because that was the original Edenic mandate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in Unseen Realm, I talk a lot about this, about inheriting the earth and ruling over angels and stuff like this. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into, you know, the Son of Man was made a little lower than the angels. You know, we see him for a little while was made lower than the angels, namely Jesus. So that, I mean, why was that even important? So that by the grace of God, he might taste death mm-hmm. for everyone. Mm-hmm. Okay, everyone, every person. You go down to verse 14. Since therefore the children, that would be us, the believers in the passage, share in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he became flesh and blood. He died that through death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil, and deliver all those who through fear of death were subject to lifelong slavery. For surely it is not angels that he helps, but he helps the offspring of Abraham. Now here's the kicker verse. Therefore, in all of that stuff, therefore, he had to be made like his brothers in every respect, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in the service of God to make propitiation for the sins of the people.
Mm.
Now, the atonement has ramifications. It has this ripple effect, like Colossians 1:16 about all things in heaven and earth being reconciled to him. There are things that are not human that are affected by the incarnation and the atonement.
Mm-hmm.
That is the central, you know, sort of cog, the central catalyst point to get a mm-hmm. new Eden,
mm-hmm.
to restore Eden. So, you know, we understand that. But when it comes to the sacrificial death, atoning for sin, it's human sin.
Right.
Yeah.
The Messiah had to become a human.
That's right.
To create this link. So that, right there it is, so that he might make a propitiation for the sins of people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to have these multiple incarnations. We don't have to think about the ET question
mm-hmm.
and have to struggle with that. We have scripture that addresses it, that links the incarnation, God becoming man, mm-hmm. to, you know, this whole issue.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to wonder about that. So again, it's an objection that really... it's understandable why it comes up, why mm-hmm. it would trouble people, but it lacks substance at the end of the day.
Right. And then there are people who have taken this idea too far even and have said, well, if they're not, you know, if there are ETs and they're not subject or they're not judged or whatever the right word is for it, but they're not within the same like collection of standards that we are in yeah. terms of sin, would that mean that they're sinless, or would that mean that they're more like super intelligent animals? Mm-hmm. Like how would we think of it?
Well, you know, when scripture talks about sin, like in the Old Testament, when you get into like moral violations,
mm-hmm.
the issue of intent always matters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And intent requires an intelligent act of the will.
Right.
So if yep. you do have a non-human entity
mm-hmm.
that is intelligent and acts with full volition and does something that is evil, I mean, that again, God, you know, the God of the Bible, really, frankly, practically anybody like murder would consider mm-hmm. evil. Well, that being is morally culpable, okay, in that sense, but Christ didn't die for that being.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, you know, it's up to God, like what do we do with this? Again, that's God's job description. He has a higher pay grade than I do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, but if God's going to hold him morally, you know, responsible, then there's going to be judgment. Again, that's the consistent scriptural pattern.
Mm.
So you can still have moral culpability. You can still have a sense of violation and sin. Things that are done willfully mm-hmm. that are contrary to the revealed will of God. I.e., again, sin in a moral sense, you can still have that happen,
mm-hmm.
you know, apart from, you know, the other aspects of this question.
That makes sense.
It does.
So just because some people might be freaked out.
That's what we do here.
How is what we're talking about, because it is different, how is what we're talking about, how is that completely removed from grays, UFOs, alien abduction, all the stuff that people attribute to being, you know, aliens or whatever, or demons posing as aliens or modern day Nephilim or however people want to define that. How is what we're talking about, how is it different than all that other stuff? How are we not grouping that together?
Well, the reason it is grouped together is because people decide to group it together.
Right.
Okay, yeah. So in one sense, we're just deciding not to group it.
Yeah.
Now, and again, that sounds a little silly, but let's think about it.
Mm-hmm.
These things are put together because people who have experiences narrate their experience through those filters.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, just because, you know, I had an experience and I saw something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, if it was conscious or if it's in my head or, you know, regressed memory or whatever. Mm-hmm. I saw this. I heard this piece of information. I heard this message.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how does that require your experience to define this question over here?
Right, that makes sense.
Yep.
The reality is it doesn't. Now, it could be related,
mm-hmm.
but there's no necessary relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And again, me personally, I think a lot of what passes for the alien abduction thing, the whole, you know, gray issue, I think there are normal explanations for some of that,
mm-hmm.
okay? For me, demonization is on the table. I think it's probably the smallest category, but to me, it's a real category.
Mm-hmm.
I think just as, and maybe even more sinister, is the way that people could use this to manipulate other people,
mm-hmm.
and also a greater spiritual intelligence could use that manipulation, again, to influence masses of people to think certain thoughts that tend to be very anti-theistic.
Mm-hmm.
Or anti-Christ, or, you know, these alternative notions about how we need to transcend ourselves. You know, we
right.
need to become more than what we are.
Mm-hmm.
We need to become as gods,
mm-hmm.
And they're going to show us how. Again, to me, the messaging is the most crucial element
yeah.
of all of this, and because the messaging has had such a wide and far reach, just the fact that you had to ask the question
mm-hmm.
tells you. This has had such a reach that people can't think about one
mm-hmm.
without the other.
Right.
Yep.
Okay, and that is significant
yeah.
because that's what we would like to call mental training.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you have been trained to think about this topic this way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the question to really ask is, how did I get there? Why?
Yeah.
yeah.
Why am I thinking that now?
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of some of this other stuff that you can go back and look at in history.
Mm. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting. Well, we are all out of time. Again, for the people at home, you saw in the commercial and trailer, you saw this amazing package that Tom Horn has put together. It's got me and Derek's book, The Day the Earth Stands Still, where we do talk about this question even more in depth. Could Christianity actually accommodate an extraterrestrial reality? That's a big part of the book. You'll have to pick it up for that. And also Dr. Michael Heiser's The Facility. Facade and the Portent that also deals with that same question. And there's a plethora of other things involved that are just as fascinating in that thing. Now, of course, you see behind me the Sci Friday sign is up, which means we got to go. We're out of time. But thank you for joining us. For Dr. Michael Heiser and Christina Peck, I'm Josh Peck, your host. Until next time, take care and God bless.